Hello and welcome to the Laughing Place Podcast. I'm your host, Doobie, and I'm back here today with, and I'm going to go to my right this time, Rebecca.
Hi.
Fanboy.
Hello, sports fans.
And Captain John.
Arr.
It's great to have all three of you here with me today, and it's great to be back on the Laughing Place Podcast. As always, before we get started, we want to remind you to contact us at podcast@laughingplace.com or to send us a voicemail at 866-718-9408. We still want to hear from you on what you think the best Disney attraction of all time is. We've got some great feedback, and we will be doing that soon. But this week, we are anxious to get into the big, big news that broke earlier today as we record this here at Disney World. And I'm going to toss it over to Fanboy so he can give us a quick rundown.
Well, Meg Crofton announced today two new resort properties. One over on the north end of the resort by the Magic Kingdom is a new resort partnered by the Four Seasons. It'll actually be where Eagle Pines and Osprey Ridge is. Used to be called the Bonnet Creek Resort. Bonnet Creek Golf Course, for those that remember. And they're actually replacing those two golf courses with one resort and 18 holes of golf that will be operated by Four Seasons and will include a hotel, timeshare, and single-family vacation homes. On the other side of property, over by the Western Way, Western Beltway, they announced that long-discussed Western Beltway Resort, which is sort of a low-end, moderate, sort of Crossroads-esque property that will be outside on Disney property, but outside the Disney Gateway. So, thoughts?
That's big.
Yeah.
Now, you said Four Seasons. This new hotel is not going to be a Disney hotel. Is this like a Swan and Dolphin arrangement?
Exactly. Four Seasons, if you remember a couple years ago, Four Seasons announced they were going to build a resort in Celebration that never materialized, and I guess through some legacy issues, they've now picked this Bonnet Creek property that has often been talked about as being a potential DVC site.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little interesting. It's going to have non-Disney timeshare units, which is also interesting. And that's also something they're talking about doing at the Western Beltway, which that property doesn't have. Neither of these have a formal name yet. But
so Disney Vacation Club actually had an interest in this location, and instead it's going to Four Seasons. However, there will be timeshares there.
Correct, which is, it's very interesting to look at that, and this comes on the heels of an announcement that Disney Vacation Club's opening up a sales center in Chicago, and
what are they going to sell?
Animal Kingdom Lodge, apparently.
Okay.
But, and Bob, Jay's been talking a lot about extending DVC outside the parks and really growing that business, and now they're talking about having an internal competitor. They're de-annexing the property from the Reedy Creek Improvement District.
So once this is done, technically this is not Disney World property?
I don't know in terms of ownership of how that arrangement's going to be worked out, if Four Seasons is purchasing the land or if they're leasing the land, but in terms of power and emergency services, it'll be Orange County. So that's, in fact, that's why they, when they made this announcement, they commented that this stuff is very preliminary, and Disney tends to wait till everything's all set in stone before they make announcements. I mean, heck, they've announced attractions that are already built and open. But because of the regulatory process that they need to go through to de-annex it from the Reedy Creek Improvement District and bring it into Orange County, that's why they had to unveil the curtain a little early.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but other than the Swan and Dolphin, which apparently were built for contractual reasons, not because that was the way Disney preferred it, Disney has not had a non-Disney resort on property by their choosing since then, have they?
Well, Shades of Green, but I think that was an extraordinary circumstance. And no, I mean, you know,
What about the currently being built Ritz? No, it's not Ritz Carlton.
Are you talking about the Bonnet Creek Resort?
Yeah.
That was never owned by Disney.
Okay.
It's just the way that relationship is Disney was never able to purchase that land, but because it's surrounded by Disneyland, it's actually governed by the Reedy Creek Improvement District.
Okay.
So it's never been Disney property. Disney really has no formal relationship with them.
Okay.
And I mean, you think back to the Dick Nunes era, and this would never have happened. He was sort of the Disney control the world mindset.
Sure.
And so I think it's very interesting. I'm not quite sure why they're doing it. I mean, I know Four Seasons is a very luxury brand in association with
Rebecca earlier.
This is what I said earlier today when they announced it. I'm like, this goes on with the couture, what I'm calling their couture mood. The announcement of the Disney branded, well, not Disney branded, but the wedding dresses that are celebrating the Disney princesses, and the Annie Leibovitz campaign with the celebrities and the fine art photographs, and this, and the a lot of the vacation packages being kind of built around yourself, you know, you get to personalize it or whatever, and to me, kind of all appealing to that couture society.
But I think if Disney's trying to get into that, why don't they just try and get into that instead of licensing it? And
well, go ahead.
I think, I mean, just as somebody who's not in the couture frame of mind, I don't.
Can you spell that for me? This is a new word for me.
But, I mean, I don't. I'm not a label gal. I didn't grow up with a label mentality. But I know a lot of at the parks, I'm noticing more and more people who are like, you know, got the Gucci bag and the Dolce & Gabbana glasses and the, you know, jeans of the whatever brand is important at that time. And I'm wondering if it's the same. I don't know. If people of that mindset go ahead and plan vacations in the same way, looking at the brand.
Well, and I think they do. But I think if we're looking at building resorts outside of the normal Disney footprint, why don't we try and develop a Disney luxury brand beyond the Grand Floridian, beyond the Grand Californian, and expand it from there?
I'm wondering if they're dealing with a confused public, because right now they've got a campaign going called Affordable Disney, where they're focusing on their Pop Century, their family suites, and whatnot. So if you're marketing yourselves to that community, how do you also market yourselves to your higher end?
But I think we've been able to do that, and I think
I agree.
And I think also, you know, it doesn't even need to be Disney branded. They could come up with, you know, Hyperion Resorts or something
that's a good point.
And you know, and I'm not saying it would be easy, but that doesn't mean it's not possible.
But the other thing in this that we've talked about before is this is the way that Wall Street wants Disney to go. Wall Street would prefer Disney not be in the hotel business, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, from a leveraged capital point of view, but I don't know. But there's a reason they're wrong, and Bob has repeatedly stated they're wrong.
Except,
and I think there's a story behind the story here, in that the Four Seasons being at Celebration and now being here. I think, you know, just like there was a story behind the Swan and Dolphin that really didn't come out, and I mean, as far as I know, Disney War. You know, in great detail. I think there's a story here, but I just don't know what that
and
story
is. And it's just for people who may not be familiar, the story there with the Swan and Dolphin is Disney basically, well, why don't you tell it better?
Well, back in before the pre-Eisner era, they made a deal with the owners of the Sheraton, or Starwood, whatever you want to call them, that they would build a Disney resort in prime property at the Magic Kingdom, sort of where Grand Floridian is. And Michael Eisner didn't want them to have that estate. He wanted to build his Grand Floridian. So he worked out a deal that they would have this nice property right outside Epcot and created the Epcot Resort District. But it was because they had to satisfy a contractual obligation.
So you think perhaps there's something akin to that going on here?
I think so. I mean, it's just from Disneyland Hotel in 1955, there's really been, 56, whenever it opened, that there's really, we've always had problems with other people running resorts inside Disney property.
Yeah, even the valet parking sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I hear actually that at this Four Seasons resort, Disney will actually run the valet and bag pen.
They'll be outsourced.
And this comes down to the sort of, also, I mean, in the back of my mind, there's been a lot of outsourcing and a lot of sort of streamlining of business. And I know that the hiring market's real slender. And is that playing a role? And should that play a role? Should the fact that there's not enough cast members out there mean that we look at creating businesses that don't rely on cast members?
That seems strange, especially since this is, 2010? And you can't really predict what the labor market's going to be like then anyway, can you?
No, but it's, you know, you can't hide from ignore the fact that Meg Crofton was head of human resources for the entire segment before she got this job. And, you know, she needs to do something quick. So far, her legacy is not doing Country Bears show.
Christmas.
Outsourcing baggage handling and valet and basically selling off parts of Walt Disney World. There's time for the nice, you know, Cynthia Harris's bringing back canoes moment that Meg hasn't had yet.
Have we not had anything like that from Meg? No, I guess not.
I can't think of anything. But bringing in a different, a totally
Never mind. Don't forget Alfredo's.
Well, there's a rumor going around. I don't know. I've not heard this from any place but the message boards that Alfredo's, which is outsourced, is closing. And I don't know if it would be replaced with an internal or external. Yeah.
Hopefully an Italian restaurant, though.
I'd hope so. With hopefully Italian cast members. In fact, I've learned something interesting. That the cast members that come for World Showcase, they are required to spend a certain percentage of their time in a cultural costume on stage, something like 80%, according to their visas. So if you go to Alfredo's, the people working in the kitchen are probably not from Italy. The people at Rose and Crown are not are most likely American. And I find that because they can't be, we can't use those cast members
in backstage positions? Yeah. Really?
And if they're ever used for like a special event, and you'll know, like, why are all these cast members at the American Gardens Theater wearing their costumes from the pavilion when they should be wearing an American costume or a generic world show, and they are required to wear a culturally relevant costume?
That's weird, because the cooks I noticed over in Japan's teppanyaki restaurant, they're not American.
They're on stage.
Gotcha.
But to bring in a totally different point, I mean a totally different perspective on the breaking news today, I was born in an oil town, and once the oil was gone, that town, it changed drastically. So thinking in terms of somebody who lives in Central Florida, I kind of worry about the growing grasp that Disney has on the tourism. And I'm a big Disney fan, so, you know, it's like catch-22 for me mentally, because part of me is like, yay, more Disney. But on the flip side, I wonder if this won't lead to more of the little 192-type mom-and-pop places closing or that type of thing, if this will further, I don't know wither the market outside of Disney for hotels, or if the demand is so great that both can thrive. Because, I mean, if something were to happen to the detriment of Disney, and you've got an area that's so reliant upon it for its economy, that's really scary.
Well, I think Disney's viewing this as the well has dried up, and that's why they're trying to find... They're not looking at building more Disney resorts. They're not looking at building more Disney theme parks or water parks or anything like that. They're looking at how can we take this massive amount of land here and find different ways to use it to grow revenue. And I'm just hoping that they're not being short-sighted.
Because going along with what you're just saying, Rebecca, the other announcement about the property they're developing on Western Way, I mean, that's definitely all outside people,
right?
But basically on Disney property for all intents. So, yes, that's in a way Disney getting bigger, but, I mean, theoretically the places that are there are going to be the mom-and-pops you're talking about. Those aren't Disney companies there.
That's true.
So, you know, maybe they can do better being even closer to property instead of, you know, having that 3-mile buffer before you even see a non-Disney place.
A smart mom and pop in this area can do well because Disney, in its outsourcing, creates the need for businesses. I mean, if you want to create a small face painting company, you get Disney as a client, you're set, because Disney has no interest in being face painting.
But they can end up painting themselves into quite a corner if they become so large here, because you end up with an economy that's based upon them. You've got your workforce where it primarily coming from a single employer. And that can create some interesting struggles when it comes to the areas.
But I think in terms of percentage, Disney's less than it used to be. This used to be the only game
in
town.
Yeah, totally.
And Disney's done a lot to bring other businesses into the community, knowing that the strength of the community.
But the fact is, I think this is a Disney town. And while there is all this other stuff, SeaWorld and Busch Gardens and who knows what else, ultimately people are coming for Disney and doing the rest. So if Disney has a downturn, the area's going to have a downturn.
Right.
No matter how many other businesses there are, those mom and pops are great, but they're only going to do well as long as Disney does well anyway.
I guess for me, I'd rather, and maybe it's this, I don't know, you know, the exact space we're talking about or whatever, but I guess for me, I'd rather see them building stuff that's more amusement park, theme park, water resort oriented, and that way the mom and pops will continue to do what they do while Disney is bringing in more people doing what they supposedly do best.
And I admit, when I first heard this, I was very disappointed because I'm very protective of how Disney uses the land. But they're building this Four Seasons thing. Well, I still don't agree with it in principle. It's not using land that would have been used for a theme park or a water park or anything. It's using a Disney golf course that was forever going to be a Disney golf course until this came around. Then the Western Beltway thing is outside of the Disney Gateway. It's right along the freeway. We're not going to build a theme park or water park right along a freeway. So, or not, actually, I guess not a freeway. It's a toll road, but you know what I mean.
it's just sounds funny. It's like just Disney's all of a sudden just a land developer.
It is, and that I mean, and it started with Celebration. Well, actually, it started with Crossroads. This and they always build it up and sell it. So, you know, they sold Crossroads, they sold Celebration. I don't know if they're going to do this here because of the really close proximity to it in terms of, but.
And it's interesting because now Crossroads is an area that has been in the news quite often lately for violence. And it's apparently a well-known area now for gang-related and drug-related incidents of violence. And that's right. I mean, and it's footsteps from a Walt Disney World gateway. I mean, you are the restaurants that they're talking about in these news reports are can you see sure. Walt Disney World's Mickey Mouse from those. And is and I wonder if, you know, thinking down the road, that, you know, you could be inviting that into your area.
Absolutely. Well, from a business perspective, I guess time will tell. But just from a plain old Disney geek fan's perspective, I mean, the headline to me is Disney giving prime real estate to non-Disney hotel, and I don't like it. So
I don't think anybody, I mean, internally in terms of cast members and externally in terms of Disney fans, thinks this is
nobody
fantastic news. So. There's a reason this wasn't announced at the press event.
But hopefully it makes Disney a lot of money so they can build us a few more e-tickets.
Yeah, because that's the way it works.
But it was announced just before the shareholders meeting, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays with that in with the Wall Street and all that as we start to get into that mentality.
In fact, before the on Monday, Bob's giving a presentation to Credit Suisse, and it'll be interesting to see. I'm really because that's the shareholder meeting's more of a state of the company address, designed for guest, cast, shareholders, investor community. But when these presentations. If you listen to them, the presentation might be very well worded, but you can read between the lines, especially when they ask questions, and you really gain some insight. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that on Monday. There's a webcast. You can listen to it, disney.com/investors.
Cool. I think we'll be listening.
Definitely.
It's a party.
Let's hope this does not go down as a mistake for Disney, because we want the company to do well. And speaking of Disney mistakes, we're going to be doing something new in the next segment of our podcast here. One of our columnists on LaughingPlace.com is named Greg Miletic, and rather than introduce him, I will let him introduce himself as we play a little something he's put together for us, and then we'll come back and comment on it.
Hey, Doobie, Rebecca, Fanboy, and Captain John. This is Greg Miletic in San Francisco, and it's great to be talking to you, even if it is asynchronously. Just to give a little background on myself, long-time Laughing Place readers might remember the series of columns I've written for the site on theme park design. My columns aren't really about news or rumors. They're more analysis about the parks, trying to figure out why they are the way they are and what makes them so appealing. I don't really have any special qualifications in this area. I'm a software designer and an illustrator, not a theme park designer. But I am a lifelong Disney fan, and I just love talking about these places. And that's what I'm going to try and do here periodically on the podcast. I have an upcoming column for Laughing Place tentatively titled Disney's Biggest Theme Park Mistakes. And for the podcast today, I thought I'd share one of the items I thought of with you guys in Orlando to see what you think and to see what the Laughing Place listeners think. So here we go. Mistake number one. This probably isn't news to most of you listeners out there, but at a given resort, Disney always charges the same admission price for each theme park. The ostensible marketing reason is that all of Disney's magical wonderlands need to seem equally special. But here's the reality. They're not all equally special. And nobody thinks they are. What trick does Disney think they're trying to pull? Who thinks that California Adventure is as good as Disneyland, even assuming you thought that California Adventure was a wonderful place to begin with? Disneyland is known world over as the best. It has three times as many attractions, including landmark ones that any American could name off the top of their head. It has the Disney characters that little kids want to see. How could anyone in their right mind think that these two parks are equivalent products? And why would Disney want to promote them as such? It's delusional. California Adventure had many problems when it opened, but in my opinion, pricing it identically to Disneyland was, and is, an incredibly naive mistake that has exacerbated all of its issues. What could possibly be wrong in sending a signal that a brand new, significantly smaller park might be just not quite as good as the world's best sitting right across the street? So there we go. A mistake that I think has cost Disney dearly, especially here in California. And also just to weigh in on last week's whole great movie ride discussion, Rebecca, I have to disagree. I don't think the ride is dated in the least. I think it is exactly as terrible today as it was on the day it opened. So I'm going to disagree, although I think it actually means that I'm agreeing with you. Anyway, have a good week, and I will talk to you guys in the future. Bye.
Thanks, Greg, for the call. Appreciate that. I noticed a fanboy was swelling with pride there for a moment until you shifted gears on your movie ride description.
That was the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Just as terrible.
That was harsh. But not as harsh as his comments earlier in the message. I actually have never even really thought about that. It's just always been a given that all the parks are pretty much priced the same. Anybody got any thoughts
on
that?
I think it is a given.
I basically thought about it when California Adventure opened.
Yeah,
so,
but I mean, everyone brought it up, Ben, but I thought, yeah, but that's silly. All the parks are always priced the same. And I mean, they were, since you had MGM Studios here was already open. And Animal Kingdom here was already open.
Well, but I mean, you got to remember that at Walt Disney World, almost nobody purchases a one-day, one-park ticket. And that's just silly. And then also, when Epcot opened, Magic Kingdom was still on ticket books. And so Epcot opened with a one-price, one-gate ticket model, and Disney Magic Kingdom was still on a different ticket model. So
sure.
It was a sort of, and then they decided, well, we'll make Magic Kingdom the same price as Epcot. And
which is logical. Those are two huge parks.
And then MGM Studios opened, and they made it the same price as Epcot, and that was okay because the demand for that park was outrageous, so that's fine. And then by that point, no one was buying a one-day ticket, so who cared what it was when Animal Kingdom opened, because nobody buys a one-day ticket. And then what happened when they built Disneyland? I mean, when they built Disney's California Adventure, they're like, okay, well, we're going to price it the same, and we'll do a ticketing strategy similar to Walt Disney World, and they forgot that people in California do purchase one-day tickets, especially when you stop selling annual passes.
All right, so taking Disney World out of the equation, because it is a different thing, in hindsight, do you think it would have been a good decision to price DCA at a lower price, Rebecca?
It wouldn't have helped with the word of mouth because the internet, well before you would have even been talking pricing, was very vocal in its opposition to the various attractions and stuff that were out there as far as Disney's California Adventure went. And so to have priced it lower would have been a PR situation for them. I mean, I'm not saying that in looking at it, I think it might have been a good idea, because for me, I think it makes sense, but I'm just saying, as far as thinking from a marketing perspective and the amount of backlash they would have had to have dealt with from the internet community, I don't know.
Well, and when they built California Adventure, I understand, because if you made it too much cheaper, then you kill the 3-day park hopper, which was really the ticket they wanted you to get, and because it would have the idea being that two one-day tickets would have been, at that point, $90. So then you're not saving the money that encourages you to get the 3-day ticket. But now looking back, and DCA doesn't have attendance problems. I mean, it has attendance problems. I don't see why we don't lower the price.
Well, lowering the price is a little bit different than setting it that way to begin with. But, I mean, it's not like it's a big secret that DCA is having issues. What are your thoughts, Captain?
I already said, I think, I mean, when California Adventure opened, I thought, you know, it's just a very different thing. So having both the same price is just a little bit crazy, because they're not the same product.
Are you familiar enough with Knott's Berry Farm and whatnot? Because some of the other area theme parks, are lower in price than Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to think to think of it in a comparable. Because I think Disneyland should be the most expensive theme park in Southern California.
Right.
I think
but
you
is
get...
Is it? And I know SeaWorld and... SeaWorld, this is Florida. In California, though, Universal, I mean, they
I know
they
they're
keep
big
up.
Bucks. Yeah, no, I know they do, but like I say, for me, for my money, I think I would be willing to pay more to get my kids into a Disney theme park than I would Magic Mountain or Universal or SeaWorld or Knott's. But but Disney's California Adventure, I don't know that, well, especially now because they've made so many changes since I was last there. I don't even know what the park looks like. But, I don't know that it would be the same. Would I be willing, just looking at comparatively?
I mean, I would compare it to probably Knott's Berry Farm would be the closest I would price it to, which I don't exactly know what the price is at the time.
I mean, I don't think Knott's Berry Farm, I know they're lower, but I don't think they're that much lower, and I'm pretty
sure
Universal is right in line. It's kind of like the theme park industry has decided top-tier theme parks get this price. And to me, while DCA certainly is no Disneyland, if I saw it priced less than Universal Studios, that would drive me crazy.
But yet, paying that much and going in there and not thinking it's worth it would probably drive you crazy
but
too.
But it's better.
I did it almost every day back.
It's better than most other theme parks out there.
How was it? Was it testing? Sorry, that's our little Happy. He heard a motorcycle. but he was barking. I don't know if you guys could pick that up. But guest satisfaction. Do they do some sort of rating that lets you know kind of how it stacks among all the
guest service measurement? And Universal doesn't have something that's as comparable, but DCA, if you ask tourist guests, not local guests,
right,
which Southern California parks are the best, Disneyland's always number one and DCA is number two.
It is.
According to my sources.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I think it'll be interesting when they open up that third park. What they do.
Well, the one thing in general is also to me, I think it's more...
Whoa, third park?
ThirdThemePark.com, right?
Remember?
It still exists.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. I think they actually let that domain go.
Yeah, they did. It's now, I think, a Disneyana Collectibles
That's
group
hilarious.
Picked that up.
Sorry,
guys. But to me, it's almost one of the problems, rather than different pricing for parks, is just how, like, all theme parks in general are just extremely expensive in the first place.
I don't think they are. Compared to a two-hour movie that's $8 or medieval times.
Or a basketball game, baseball game.
The reason the pricing never bothered me was because you can't do Disneyland in a day. And as far as I'm concerned, DCA is a day's entertainment. So you're paying for a day's entertainment, you get a day's entertainment. You can't do all of Disneyland's attractions, so it doesn't really matter that they have two or three times as many. Is my feeling. If you want to do them all, you're going to pay twice as much anyway to go twice.
I disagree that was the biggest Disney theme park mistake, though. Or is that just one of them?
He didn't say that was the biggest. Oh. He said that was one of them.
Because we all know what the biggest was.
What was that?
The Four Seasons Resort at the Bonnet Creek.
That's a little premature there, fanboy.
Oh, wow.
Do you really think that's
going to
be that bad?
This is not scaring you. I haven't seen you like this since.
He walked into the room kind of down today, I have to admit.
Does this count in biggest theme park mistakes? It's not exactly.
This is the worst mistake we had.
Sector.
This is the worst Disney company mistake since deciding not to continue making films with Pixar.
That didn't last long, did it?
I'm so lost.
Remember when Michael Eisner announced that Disney would not be distributing Pixar films after Cars?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That was a big mistake.
That was.
Glad they remedied that.
Boy, we are dry today. We are so, like, financial. Boring people. Are we going to talk about something
fun? We're going to talk about something fun right now because it's time for me to steal your medal because it's Captain Challenge time. Let's go.
I've had it sitting out so that it taunts you with the fact that I actually won a trivia contest.
Just waiting for its rightful owner.
Hurry up, John. Let's go.
All right. So Rebecca is the current medal holder.
Yeah.
And so here.
We have to have individual noises.
I'm beep.
What am I again?
You're Rebecca's Bop.
No, he's Bop.
Oh, you're Bop. And what are you?
I was just me.
You could just answer the question or, I don't know.
I was just going to say my
table
name.
Or something.
I was going to say my name.
Okay, I'm going to be Beep.
I'll be Bop.
Okay.
Oh, she was Peace or Quiet.
No.
All right, let's go on.
Anyway, all right, here we go. Now, on the subject of the Great Movie Ride, sort of. We sort of passed that. But on the subject of the Great Movie Ride... There is a prop in the queue in the Great Movie Ride from Star Wars A New Hope. Name it.
No idea.
Really?
Yeah,
New Hope, was that the first one, 1977?
The fourth one.
Yes, the fourth. No, episode four.
No idea.
I'm going to guess a lightsaber.
No.
Oh. R2-D2?
I'll give you a clue. Let the Wookiee win.
Chess set.
Chewbacca.
The chess table.
Yeah.
You're
good. Yay!
All right.
Wow.
All right.
Hey,
Look at Rebecca just tossing the medal over to him.
Sorry, I dropped it.
Oh, I'm gonna go over to the Sorcerer Hat stage this weekend and be interviewed by all the ESPN personalities with my medal.
Mm-hmm.
What's your? Oh, yeah. Okay. If you could see Fanboy, you'd know how funny that is.
He's wearing his medal.
I'm a winner.
Yes, you are.
And Doobie is bitter, apparently.
No. It's okay. It's okay. Do you have one for the listeners?
We got one for the listeners. And
that was tough.
All right, on the subject of resorts, be it Disney or not exactly through Disney. Grand Floridian, Polynesian, and Contemporary, did they open in 1971, true or false? Did all three of them open in the same year, true or false?
Don't answer, fanboys.
Don't answer. This is
for the listeners.
This is for the listeners.
Well, if they just rewind the podcast, they'd hear the answer.
Hopefully they were.
Or they can fast forward and hear the answer. You know how this.
You know.
Oh,
we're not live.
Oh, that's a good point. But then they'll seem smarter because they'll be the answer giving.
So if
you want to be smart, rewind, and and that way you'll know before the answer is given. If you want to cheat, fast forward and you'll hear the answer.
All right, you spoiled the secret. You know.
That's about as confusing as that moment in Lost last week when it was like, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, and it was like time and changing and
chilling.
It was scary. Yeah.
Any Lost fans out there? We're huge Lost fans. If you have any Lost questions or comments, please send those in. Give us an excuse to talk about it.
Any Knights of Prosperity fans out there?
Woo-hoo!
Oh, yeah. Any Office? No, that's on NBC, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
That doesn't count.
Never mind.
No.
Can't talk about the Peacock.
And if anyone likes In Case of Emergency...
There's a problem. Come on.
Talk about biggest Disney mistakes.
We didn't even last. We had to turn the channel.
We lasted like two-thirds of an episode on that show.
There was only one show that we lasted shorter amount of time from ABC.
What was that called?
Heist, I think.
No, that was on NBC.
It was?
No,
yeah.
It was the one with the real-time marriage.
Oh, Big Day.
Big Day. Or something.
Lasted about three words.
Yeah, we heard that.
Wow, we're just really positive today here, aren't we?
We're about to get positive because Fanboy over there... He came to me earlier this week and said, Doobie, there's something I want to talk about on the podcast. So I said, Fanboy, it's your show. Let's hear it.
Well, if you happen to read the Variety article talking about Orne Aviv, the new head of production for the Walt Disney Studios, it really outlaid his vision for the segment. They really redefined the way what a Disney picture movie is. And I think Pirates of the Caribbean really has become the bastion of that. It doesn't need to be... hokey family friendly. It just needs to not include any foul language, not include any graphic violence. It can be intense, just not violent, and be broad audience. It doesn't have to involve a cast of 12 and under, and just make good quality general audience movies. I don't mean G-rated, but I mean it could be G, PG, PG-13, and they trimmed the number of movies they're making, and we know that. But they're also not using that to hold them back. And that's what I thought was really fascinating about this article is they're going to make a movie that they think is good regardless of if it meets any mandate. Just because they have 15 movies they're making this year, if they see a good number 16, they're still going to make it. If they see a good movie that is going to have to include foul language or violence because of the nature of the movie, they're still going to make it. And that was really – and it seemed like the whole point of this article was to let them know that, yes, we've sort of redefined what we're trying to do, but we're going to make any movie we want. And also – It was interesting to read how he's great partners with Dick Cook and how they brought Robert Zemeckis in. This week they announced a partnership with Sparkler Entertainment, which helped create National Treasure. And making the Disney movies not silly. I remember growing up, it was sort of shameful to see a Disney movie because they're always so silly and stupid. And now National Treasure, which really has no business being a Disney movie, I mean, they could have included a little bit more violence and some F-bombs, and it would have been an okay PG-13 R-rated movie, but it's still a Disney movie, and I think that's awesome that they're really growing and what it means. And what another interesting thing I read in an article is that when Orne Aviv came in to the business, he took 100 movies that were in development and put them in turnaround, which means there were 100 movies that we're not going to be making, and presumably bad movies that are not going to be making, because he came in. And I'm just thinking, wow, that's saving us a lot of grief. Because, I mean, I see every Touchstone, every Disney, nearly every Miramax movie that comes out now. And I'm glad I'm not going to have to sit through some movies that were just made because they needed to justify making a movie. What do you think?
Did he not get there in time to stop Wild Hawks?
No, he didn't.
We saw a preview of that last weekend, and we wish he'd come just a few weeks sooner, I think.
There wasn't a preview
for Pirates 3 in front of it, right?
No, Meet the Robinson, which I just thought was weird.
Well, now they're saying that's going to be with Dancing with the Stars, so, you know, it just keeps on going on forever.
That I can see.
Ever and ever.
That, I would not be surprised. But, in fact, I could almost bet on that.
Let's get back to what you were talking about.
No, but to me, there was a movie that Touchstone or Hollywood released a couple of years back. It was a boxing movie of Woody Harrelson, and I'm watching it and I'm going, "Why did we make this? What? This is just bad."
I mean, this is all great. This is fantastic, but this also seems like no brainer. Is this really something new, or is this just lip service? And we'll see if
no,
it happens.
No, it is new because you know, look at Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Dick Tracy. Think about those. If we made those now, would those be Disney or Touchstone?
Clearly Disney.
Right. But back in the day, those were Touchstone because there was this need to keep Disney family-friendly. And when they thought family-friendly, they thought talking down. And animation was the only kind of Disney movie you were allowed to see as a grown-up and be respected. And it's nice that – and a miracle that they were able to pull it off. I think Dick Cook and Orin Aviv should get a lot of credit. He was, before he was head of production, he was in marketing and everything, of really taking a studio and rebranding it in such a way that it brings it back to what the studio used to be. You know, Disney used to, Third Man on the Mountain is not a,
right.
I mean, it's not necessarily a great movie, but it's not a little, two kids get lost in a museum and craziness ensues.
I'm just trying to think, did that really stop during the 70s and 80s, movies like that?
I think so. I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I still saw every Disney movie. And some like Disney's The Kid and Jungle to Jungle.
Well, but we also still have stuff like that. But I mean, you also had Tron and The Black Hole.
But
that's before
80s. Michael. Okay.
I'm trying to think, and specifically 80s, and I'm not coming up with anything just off the top of my head. Wish I had my Disney A to Z so I could look.
All right. That's a good point, though. What about the other aspect, though, about if there's a good movie, we're going to make it and all that? Did it used to be a lot more rigid than that? We're going to make our 16 movies, and if number 17 is great, it's just...
Well, I don't think it had to be rigid because they were making movies just to... What happened was is there was a lot of overhead at the studios, and so they, in order to spread the overhead amongst the movies, they had to create a lot of movies, you know, 16, 18, 20 movies to pay off the overhead. So when you trim the overhead, got rid of people that don't need positions and things like that, now they narrowed it down so that not every movie has to be made, but they'll still make the good ones. I mean, Jerry Bruckheimer, I mean, a long time Disney collaborator, just made created an option to script or something to Jihadist in Paradise. Probably not going to be Disney branded, but there's no reason why they can't make it.
But they will continue to do the Santa Claus 3, Shaggy Dogs, or...
Well, I think Santa Claus 3. I don't know about the Shaggy Dogs.
Because I certainly like the idea of Miracle, Glory World. These are great Disney movies. It makes me very happy to see Disney doing serious movies.
And remember the Titans was the first movie that came under this sort of, let's make more Disney movie mandate. In fact, that was originally going to be a Touchstone movie, and they redid it a little bit and made it a Disney movie. And... I think that's the kind of stuff that I'm excited to see. I mean, not that we can't make fun little family comedies,
right? Because I like the silly comedy, so I'd hate to see those go.
No, but I think, but you're going to make the funny ones is sort of the idea.
Okay.
Not Meet the Deedles. And to me, it's just I wish every division was running on the cylinders the studios is right now. I mean, Disney Channel obviously is, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, that reminds me. Of Iger's remarks at the shareholders meeting, which I was looking through my notes trying to find.
From last year?
Yeah, from last year. Because he was talking about Disney. He was explaining why... He was just talking... I guess he was trying to introduce himself... In some ways, I think he was just trying to introduce himself and what his vision was and whatnot. And he talked about how Disney's unique role, and he said, is the ability to forge common bonds among uncommon people with hope, optimism, and fantasy that transcends borders. And I think a lot of the films you guys are talking about do exactly that.
Sure.
I mean, remember the Titans, National Treasure. You don't have to have animation to do that. And I think that's where the Disney family brand has shifted. and I agree that I like where it's going. I just hope that they continue to stay true. I know Dick Cook to the NFFC membership when this was first, you know, kind of developed, when this was really showing its development, he talked about, you know, that they understand that people look to Disney to be a movie that you can take all the family to and not, you know, be embarrassed, not feel like you have to cover your kids' eyes kind of thing. And I hope they stay true to that. So far, they seem to be staying true to that. And I hope that you can continue to kind of have that feeling towards the Disney specific. I'm very glad that Disney Studios has these other brands that they can put more questionable, you know, material for. But I'm glad to see the Disney brand going beyond
and
simply
there's a corporate
animation.
Sort of idea that this is a three-brand company, Disney, ABC, and ESPN. So they renamed Buena Vista Games, the Disney Interactive Studios, then all the adult games, and they're still going to make adult games. I mean, I don't mean like Leisure Suit Larry, but Tour Rock and stuff like that is going to be ABC branded in the United States. So it's going to be ABC Games or whatever they decide to call it. And then internationally it'll be called Touchstone because obviously the American Broadcasting Company does not have a huge presence in across the world. But
which seemed kind of interesting to me. I'm surprised they didn't just go with Touchstone in general.
Well, and I think because they're moving away from Touchstone in general, I think, in America. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Touchstone renames itself ABC Films.
Really?
Yeah, because that's not one of the brands that Bob feels is integral to the company. Hmm. That Touchstone, while it might have had allusions to be such, was never became a branded studio. No one's, you know, everyone knows Universal. Everyone knows, you know, Warner Brothers. No one knows Touchstone, and when they, you know, when it's talked about in the trades, they always just say Disney's Touchstone.
I noticed that today, in fact.
Let me ask your opinion.
Wild Hogs, I think it was.
Because I think Rebecca touched on a good point. Is yes, you want to expand Disney to include these films you're talking about. There's always the danger you're going to take it too far, knowing that Disney label was going to bring a certain amount of people in and give you a certain impression, but you don't want to take advantage of that and make a movie that truly shouldn't be Disney. Do you trust the people at the top to guard the brand?
Yes, because there are rules about what they will and will not do. There's absolutely no tolerance for foul language. There's no tolerance for violence as in the graphic kind. I mean, there can be fighting and swordplay and stuff like that, but nothing like that. There's no... I forget what the third rule is, but there's three rules.
Wild Hogs,
no smoking.
Wild Hogs clearly was not a Disney movie,
right?
But it didn't have any of those three things you mentioned. It had a lot of slapstick. Except for the specific content, it could have been a Disney movie. Do you trust the people in 5 years to make sure that's still not a Disney movie?
Well, yes, because the people that would have made that, if they thought that could have been a Disney movie, they would have made it a Disney movie. There have been movies where at one point it's considered a Disney movie and then it becomes a Touchstone movie because when they see it, they go, hey, you know what? Not our thing. And so I trust them. I mean, are they going to make a mistake? Maybe. But
I know it's a totally different part of the company, but when I see some of the Jessica Rabbit merchandise that's out there, it makes me worry just a little bit when they start pushing what Disney is.
Right, and I trust the head of the motion picture studio who's been with the company since the 70s, I believe, you know, since the days of Retlaw, to be a better brand ambassador than some guys at the main gate office complex here that designed the merchandise. And I mean, there's some great merchandise people, don't get me wrong, but honestly, they're not the strongest branded ambassadors the company has, as you can see at the merchandise.
Well, the funny thing about this is that I was reading the Jim Hill article and they were saying, you know, Prince of Persia is going to be, you know, we're pushing that as the next franchise. But like that, the source material for that is like so not Disney that it's sort of odd.
Can you bring me up to speed a little bit? I'm not familiar with what Prince of Persia. I mean, it's a multi-massive player game, right?
It's just like an action adventure game. You know, it's I'm not exactly familiar with it too much. I'm just aware that it's very violent. It's a very graphic game.
I would not have Jim Hill be the source of my studio news.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, they're not thinking about it. So if they're thinking about putting a Disney movie under something that's based off of something that's violent, and maybe not necessarily making something that's as violent, but, you know, sort of associating themselves with something that's, you know, that rough, that, you know, a different mentality is going into this.
Isn't that kind of where Bruckheimer came from. I mean, in a way, when I first started hearing about pirates and Bruckheimer, I remember thinking that it was probably going to be, you know, really rough. I remember being concerned that it wouldn't be a very family-friendly product.
Well, but Bruckheimer, I mean, yeah, he did The Rock and stuff. His first Disney movie under Disney Pictures was Remember the Titans. And Disney worked with him to tone it down. It had all sorts of foul language in the script, and they cut it out. You know, you read these articles, and it could just be spin. I don't know. But Jerry Bruckheimer says, no, he's okay with, you know, making the movie fit, if the movie fits.
Right. Sometimes you can make the film without the language. I understand that. And sometimes you can't. There are some topics which it would just come across. It would cease to be believable.
Captain, you were saying earlier, like before we started recording, about some other Jim Hill news you read this week. Can you share?
He put up some information about the next Pixar project, WALL-E. It seems to be it's like really detailed description, so you should probably just go over there and read it. But it's very fascinating how a jump in style Pixar is going to be going with this one. Like, I think the first third doesn't even necessarily have any dialogue in it.
Ooh.
And there's actually an appearance from like an actual actor, I think, in this as well, rather than, you know, computer generated.
Is it Mr. Tchaikovsky? Because that would explain a lot.
Mr. Tchaikovsky.
No dialogue or an actual person. Okay.
And it's like the story behind it is like humans have basically treated this takes place in like the year 2700. Humans have trashed the Earth, so there's robots on the Earth. You know, humans are like in a space station somewhere. So it's just about the story about this trash collecting robot who tries to learn about, you know, humans with his buddy who's a cockroach named Spot.
Who's directing this one?
Andrew Stanton, I think.
Nemo dude,
yeah.
Push okay. Crash.
Dude.
Righteous dude.
All right, well, that's interesting. I'm going to check that out. Moving along here, we're going to...
I hear the Pixar movie after that's going to be a real departure from their style.
What's that?
Toy Story 3.
I'd like to give a shout-out to the ILM guys for winning the Special Effects Award.
That's right.
Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
Forgot all about Oscars.
It's a wonderful night for...
And Cars didn't
Cars
win.
Cars didn't win.
Wow.
But Helen Mirren won for The Queen, Miramax's first Oscar under the post-Harvey Weinstein... era.
You saw that movie, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
It was good.
Okay.
Best Miramax movie I saw all year.
Next week is a very, very exciting time for us Disney fans because all the Disney bigwigs gather in one room along with all the Disney fans and that one, not the fans, along with all the Disney shareholders and a few Disney fans. And then what's that lady's name?
Oh, Evelyn Lewis.
Evelyn Lewis, she's always there.
Mr. Eisner! Oh, I guess now it's Mr. Iger! Mr. Iger!
Oh, that reminds me. There was one thing I wanted to mention from that Variety article you were talking about. The funniest line I read in there was an analyst who said, quote, Iger continues to win points simply for not being Eisner. So, anyway, next week is the shareholders meeting in New Orleans. And what do you think we might be looking forward to this year? I mean, I know it's not necessarily made for big announcements and such, but there's always some little things that come out either overtly or between the lines. What might we be hearing the focus be on this year?
Mint juleps.
And fritters.
Yeah.
I hear the mint juleps in New Orleans are slightly different than the ones in New Orleans Square, though.
Just a wee bit.
I hope all the Disney fans and Disneyland cast members that come to learn about their company learn that before they show up to the meeting. Although I hear Evelyn Lewis will partake.
Why aren't they green? What's wrong? Where's the blue bayou? But seriously.
Yeah, I hear actually in the middle of the presentation there would be a restaurant that you'll go by before you go into the meeting.
Will the people inside be yelling, throw us a roll? No, the people on the boats will be yelling that. Okay, that was dumb.
Shocking.
Well,
that's okay.
He'll talk about Disney Mobile, since last year he talked about ESPN Mobile, and that's not around anymore.
That's right. Rebecca was going through some of the big things Bob Iger focused on last year, and one of them was ESPN Mobile.
But he also focused on ABC.com and how they're going to offer the episodes for download and whatnot, and, you know, that's been huge.
Did that not exist a year ago?
It was just kind of sneak peeking, I guess I would call
wow.
it. I mean, it really rolled out
following that. That was huge.
That. I'm expecting to see him celebrate the new Disney.com look.
Which was announced at the last shareholder meeting. It was unveiled at the last shareholder meeting. That's when they first showed it, and it looked nothing like the Disney.com I go to today. But that's why they had a year to work on it.
Year plus, because it still has a ways to go, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, but that kind of that's the way it always is with, I think, internet.
I'm a little surprised, though, that the big part that they hyped when they – well, that was hyped, whether it was Disney's doing or media's doing. The big part that was hyped at the announcement still hasn't rolled out, which would be the, quote, MySpace section.
Last year –
maybe they listened to me and
– The focus was on the strategic priorities of creativity, technology, and international expansion. And I think he's going to talk about the successes of those and then also talk about the three brands, ABC, Disney, and ESPN, and then talk about how now they're working on giving you those brands wherever you are, whenever you are, however you want it.
Let me ask you, since you have a good mind for the corporate and Disney's history, I mean, you're able to convey some very specific goals, the three brands, and now we have these three brands, we're going to get them out. It seems like really good planning. Is this the way it's always been, or is having this kind of focused, this is what we're going to do, methodicalness? I don't know if you can quite understand what I'm saying.
I mean, Bob Iger is much more methodical than Eisner was. Eisner would talk about the three brands, but when it came down to actually executing them, and I think when he talked about him, it was probably because Bob Iger was whispering it in his ear because he was president at the time. I don't, you know, he wasn't renaming businesses to fit the three brands. He wasn't looking at it. I think Bob is much more, has a much better view of what he wants to do. I think Michael was more passionate of the heart guy. And not saying one's better than the other, but.
Because, I mean, I know that ABC Sports now is what?
ESPN on ABC.
ESPN on ABC Sports. And then you talk about the potential of renaming Touchstone to ABC. Yeah.
I mean, and that's just me.
I realize that, but even the thought about it, that seems very smart. It seems, you know, that's how you do it.
Well,
you get your brands,
difference.
And then you execute your brands, and that's great.
Well, and that, to me, that's, you know, Bob Iger's talk, you know, they always talk about acquisitions, and ESPN's acquired some things, and Buena Vista Games or Disney Interactive Studios has done some studio acquisitions. But Bob's announced that he's not looking at acquiring anything, that he doesn't feel Disney's missing anything. And the only thing that I think they could acquire would be another brand, and I don't know what that would be. In fact, I mean, I think about it all the time because that's really, you know, what Disney does well is take a brand, whether it's Disney or ESPN, and expand it. I mean, ESPN is no longer a cable network. It's now the worldwide leader in sports and in actuality, not just a slogan.
Right.
And so, you know, you think about, well, what's missing? You know, like, what brand could we take and do that to? And they've tried doing that with Baby Einstein to a degree of success. But that's the company's model now. Taking Disney Vacation Club and expanding it outside of Disney and expanding that brand. That's where the growth's going to come from.
Any other thoughts on the shareholder meeting?
Well, I think you'll get to see, for the first time, for me, I think any sneak previews we have of upcoming features and stuff, I think will really reflect the new leadership. But maybe I'm wrong on that. I'm just thinking timetable-wise. Last year, whatever would have been previewed at this shareholders meeting would have been stuff that was already well in development before Iger came in, whereas now I'm thinking that stuff might have been tweaked enough that you're going to see more of the vision of Lasseter and Catmull and Iger in whatever stuff we see.
And I think you're going to hear a really strong testament from somebody. I don't know if it's going to be John Lasseter, Dick Cook, about Meet the Robinsons. Because I think that the company feels that Disney doesn't think that that's a serious picture. And I think they're doing a lot to counteract that by having John come out and say, I think this is a great movie and things like that. I really see that. And I know it's not months away from the shareholder meeting. But I bet you're going to see a huge support for that movie at the meeting.
Did they not do that with Chicken Little?
They did not.
Yeah.
They did not? Wow, with all the marketing they did on that and they didn't give it that.
No. And I don't know how much of it's spin and how much of it's politics, but, you know, when you listen to John Lasseter talk about Meet the Robinsons, he actually sounds like he likes it.
How do they talk about Underdog?
It's not animated. Well,
I realize, so not Lasseter, but the company in general. I want to see a good showing of Underdog at this meeting, a nice 5-minute clip to really get the people excited. This is a big movie.
Have you noticed that how much play Underdog's getting? And just in terms of that trailer, I mean, for being the August movie that nobody cares about, they're really, I'm seeing a lot of One Nation Underdog.
I think we're going to be surprised at the success of Underdog.
Maybe this will be the first place the trailer will be.
I'm not going to
see. Nobody predicted it.
I guarantee you they will get a good
I'll be the first one to say it. This is where people see it. Right there.
I'm going to skip watching Spider-Man 3 because I already have my super movie set, hero movie set for this year. And
but
it ain't
I can
pirates.
Tell you what I'd like to see at the shareholders meeting.
What would you like to see?
Evelyn Lewis in her birthday suit.
No.
Whoa.
My
eyes.
Leave Evelyn alone. She does a lot of hard work for the common man, as it were.
That can afford the bazillion dollars
exactly,
that she sells.
I know. It's kind of funny. See, her newsletter goes to businesses, and I looked up the subscription price one time. It was tens of...
$750,000 per sentence, I believe.
It wasn't like that, but it was very expensive. But, you know,
I wonder what she feels about the Four Seasons Resort.
I have a feeling you'll find out.
Sorry, Rebecca.
It's okay. You guys keep talking amongst
yourselves. No, it's your turn, Rebecca. Everybody be quiet.
I'll be quiet.
I'll be peace. Go on.
Last year, right around this time, is when they announced the return of Oswald the Rabbit, the Lucky Rabbit, and we haven't really seen him since.
I'd kind of
like to hear more about him.
Well, you can't because he's silent.
Well, okay, but...
That's his problem. He's out there going, waving his arms around and no one can hear him.
So that's what I would like. I would like to learn how I'm going to, you know, why did I care that last year he came back? Other than, you know, it's wonderful because he was gone. And
yeah, I mean, Al Michaels actually did some football games.
So that... That's what I'm looking
forward to.
There
is a serious lack of Oswald merchandise out there.
Although it is one of Consumer Products' initiatives for it to come out, and yeah. I just don't know why it's taking so long.
I think I saw some at the toy fair.
Really?
Probably.
I think I saw a couple of items at the toy fair. I can't remember for sure. There was so much at the whenever the toy fair comes out, there's like, you know, as it should be, you're inundated with images, page after page of Ratatouille toys and Pirates of the Caribbean merchandise and, you know, Meet the Robinsons, and it's like, oh, and princesses, oh, so much pink.
I have a question for you, John. Uh-huh. When it comes to the movie, it's Pirates of the Caribbean. Comes down to Disney Cruise, it's a Caribbean cruise. Is that just me, or is that, am I wrong?
I think the correct way to say it would be Caribbean.
So it's a Caribbean cruise?
It's a Caribbean cruise, yes. Yeah.
Remember, the cruise line has a lot of international cast members, so they may pronounce
it changes.
In the Caribbean.
It changes.
You know, in preparation to going to New Orleans next week, I started saying Nawlins and stuff like that, so I don't sound like a...
I have a prediction question for you guys.
Sure.
Okay, so last year was the big unveiling of, you know, Pixar as our partner, you know, thing, and you know, part of our team now. And John Lasseter took center stage and, you know, quite a bit of time and was really out there and big cheers and whatnot. Do you expect to see Lasseter have as large a presence at this upcoming shareholders meeting as he was granted last year?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. So that's 2-2. We'll see.
Yes. 3-2.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Pete and repeat, we're in a boat.
It's like, okay, you two, shut up. Captain's orders right here.
Aye, aye.
The captain.
Walking the plank.
So, he had a lot to say last year. He talked about, you know, his involvement with Imagineering. He talked about animation.
Refresh my memory. Where was the Disney-Pixar relationship at the meeting last year?
It had not finalized, but the sale was imminent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe they'll talk about ABC Radio.
Oh, that's still ongoing, huh? Them in Citadel.
I bet they won't be showing Monsters, Inc. laugh floor clips.
That's hitting below the belt. That's harsh.
Okay. Anyway. That's harsh. We're running out of time here. I'd like to remind everyone, though, to let us know your favorite Disney song. We did get some interesting entries recently that we had hoped to get to today, but looking at the clock over there, I'm sure you're ready for us to shut up. So we'll save that for next week, but email us, call us with your favorite Disney songs. Podcast at laughingplace.com or 866-718-9408. Before we close out today, though, I know you can't wait to hear the answer to this week's Captain's Challenge.
All right. The question was, the Polynesian, the Contemporary, and the Grand Floridian all opened in the same year would be false. The Grand Floridian came in 1988, I believe.
But the Contemporary and Polynesian did both open in 1971 with the park.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly,
and Fort Wilderness Resort and Campground.
Oh, I didn't forget that. And the Contemporary was built, you know, they actually prefabricated those rooms elsewhere and just inserted them in. It was a unique architecture.
Right. And then I remember 20 years later when they went in and just gutted that whole system because there were leaky pipes and things like that.
Setting you up, damn boy.
Hey, you know who the original sponsor was supposed to be? It was the Steel Federation. And that's why they did it that way, to show the benefits of modular construction.
The hotel was going to have a sponsor?
Yep.
That's cool. Kind of like, Four Seasons. That's interesting.
Who's what?
It's way different.
This new hotel that
we
started
with. That's not a sponsor. That's a... Although, you hear who's sponsoring the California Food and Wine Festival?
I did.
I forgot,
but I can't remember.
Vanity Fair.
Oh, that's right.
We put some Annie Leibovitz pictures in, and next thing you know, they were knocking at our door.
That's cool. What kind of food do they make?
I'm guessing it's out of paper.
Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. We want to hear about your favorite Disney song. We want to hear about the best Disney attraction ever. Captain, any last words?
I've got a jar of dirt.
Go to YouTube. Search on Jar of Dirt. I believe the first one that comes up there will be Captain John's.
I've got a Jar of Dirt remix video. Check it out.
It's disturbing.
Hilarious. YouTube, Jar of Dirt, absolutely hilarious. Join the tens of thousands that have viewed it and laughed. Fanboy, any final words?
In the spirit of ESPN The Weeknd, I'm going to end with a, did you know that Test Track opened on March 17th, 1999, and always breaks down on the birthday of its opening?
And that differs from other days.
Because it's March 17th.
If you're in The Weeknd is this weekend, you got to be heading over there, Rebecca?
Most definitely. I'm very excited about that and about the upcoming celebration of 1 year of Hannah Montana on the Disney Channel. That's coming up in a few weeks. Yay!
ESPN and Hannah Montana. It's really the
Yay!
Best of both worlds.
Woohoo!
Best of both worlds.
See you next week.
You're out in the show, then you rock out the show. You get the best.